and welcome to T-minus 12 from Fueling Endurance. I'm Alan McCubbin. I'm an accredited sports dietitian based in Melbourne and have almost two decades experience working with runners, cyclists and triathletes to help them stay healthy and optimize their performance from complete beginners through to professional and Olympic athletes. And in the final episode of our special six-part podcast series, we're catching up one last time with our guest athlete, Brett, just 1 week out from the 100-kilometer Ultra Trail Australia. We'll check in on Brett's taper nutrition and come up with some contingency plans for if things go wrong on race day. A reminder that this special podcast series was supported by Aidstation, who kindly provided Brett with a supply of products to test out in training in preparation for race day. Aidstation is an online sports nutrition retailer here in Australia that stock a huge range of different sports nutrition brands, including those used in most of the main running, cycling and triathlon events over here. And the best part is that you don't have to buy a whole box of the same gel just to try one and see if you like it or not. You can buy a single drink mix, sachets, bars, gels and waffles, mixing and matching brands and flavours to get whatever you need. They'll then hand pack whatever you've ordered into a single box and ship it right to your door. You can find them at aidstation.com.au, and if you'd like 10% off your first order from them, check out the information in the show notes. But let's catch up with our guest athlete Brett Kennedy now and see how he's feeling with just over a week to go till race day. Brett, welcome back. Getting close. We were just saying off air before, 1 week from now and you'll be on your way to Sydney for UTA. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm feeling good. I'm just, right in the middle of the taper now. So the Ks are kind of dropping down. I'm usually pretty calm in a taper. I don't get too excited too early. So, but yeah, certainly really looking forward to getting to Katoomba.
Yeah, fair enough. And last time, obviously, we were talking about, because you were just about to start the taper, the fact that from a nutrition point of view, you're training a lot less. You're probably burning through a lot less calories this couple of weeks. You know, we don't want to overdo that either and go into the point where, you know, people try and cram weight loss in that last couple of weeks or anything like that. But how have you found adjusting things? Has it been easy? Has it been difficult? Some people say, oh, you know, my appetite's still right up here where it is during the sort of peak block of training. And now the training's come down, but the appetite's still up there. How have you found it?
It's not been too bad. I've certainly felt like I've been hungry. I've been eating well and maybe just like right on the limit of probably what I should be eating given the reduction in training. But I have actually had just a very slight drop consistently in weight, probably less than half a kilo. But so I'm obviously not overdoing the food, but also not underdoing it as well. So,
yeah. Okay. And if we think way back to the start of this whole process, you know, 11 weeks ago or whatever it was, I think you're talking at that stage, you know, you obviously weren't hugely focused on weight, but you're sort of saying, well, if it came down a couple of kilos, that might be helpful because obviously there's a lot of going up and down stairs in particular and steep gradients at UTA. Has that actually changed over time? It's not really something that we've come back and discussed too much because I know you didn't want to really focus too much on it, but have you found that there has been a change over these 10 or so weeks?
I'd say if I went back, I'd probably say I'm probably maybe a kilo lighter, like currently as I was on day one, but yeah, that's kind of changed over time, but I'm where I've been before in terms of weight, but I think particularly the last few weeks I've been more consistent around it. You know, I've seen probably less fluctuation. I think I've just kind of found that good balance between fueling and, you know, and hydrating and yeah, not under fueling. So yeah.
Now Brett's race plan is all ready to go, as it should be this close to race day. But there was one very possible scenario that we hadn't discussed up until this point that does influence his race nutrition and particularly hydration strategy. Here in Victoria and South Australia, we've had beautiful weather for weeks now, but in Sydney, they've had the exact opposite. It just pretty much hasn't stopped raining that entire time. And it was one thing that I realized that we hadn't really discussed is the fact that those sweat rate numbers will probably go out the window a little bit if it's pouring with rain on the day. Because obviously you then have your skin is already covered in water without sweat and it's evaporating off to lower your body temperature. And so you can be in a situation where basically the rain provides the sweat rather than your body providing the sweat, so to speak. and therefore you're going to produce a lot less sweat and not need as much fluid. So that is certainly a possibility. And I'm not sure, have you looked at any sort of long range forecast for the day yet?
I've not. I try to tune out a bit to that because, yeah, I know up there it can change quite quickly. So I've just got fingers crossed that at least it calms down for rate, so that we can race the course that's currently, planned.
Yeah. No, fair enough. Yeah, look, I think from a fluid intake point of view during the race, obviously we've planned a certain amount of fluid, but not all of that contains carbohydrate, obviously. You know, we're looking at about 500 mils an hour for the carbohydrate component, which is sort of one flask with the drink mix that you're using. And so from that perspective, I guess, the additional fluid while we're carrying it, because if it is warm and sunny, you'll need that much fluid. You may not need that much fluid either. And so I guess that's where we're using thirst to kind of guide you up and down within that range, whether it's as low as that 500 mils an hour and not much more, or whether it's going to be quite a bit more. And obviously we've done the gut training in case you need the upper end of that range, but knowing that if it's a cooler day or it is raining a bit, then, it may be at that lower end of the range as well. So yeah, it's an interesting one. And we'll just see how that goes. I guess that's the other thing that you may think about having up your sleeve is just a few contingency solid options, just in case, like it is very wet and very cold, and you don't even feel like 500 mils an hour is still too much, and that's possible as well. In which case, it might be like substituting in an extra solid item in place of your half that flask or something like that. I don't think you'll probably need to go to that extreme, but it could theoretically happen, so it's probably worth keeping that in mind.
And that's where it's good that I've had tried those knack bars and waffles, because
exactly right. Yeah, so that's that plan B that we talked about a few weeks ago. So yeah, another aspect that we hadn't really considered up to this point is not only how much food and fluid Brett needs for his event, but the way it's consumed, as well as other aspects of how he executes his race. These factors may have a role to play in terms of minimizing the risk of nausea occurring, which has been the main challenge that Brett's encountered in past events. One thing we haven't really talked about too much in terms of your nausea, because when you've had the nausea, obviously it's a few hours into the race, but do you find that there's any pattern about the terrain of the event, like it always happens after a big hill climb or something like that, after a bit where you've got to sort of push yourself a bit harder as opposed to sort of easier sections of the race?
If I think back, a lot of the time it's around the same kind of time mark. It's around that probably 3-4 hour mark. And when I do think back to the races where it has happened, it has been usually not too far after a checkpoint. It's almost like a load, at that point you're needing to take off, there is a bit of messing around. And when I think back to UTA and Hut to Hut, and even Cozzy when I did that, it was probably coming off the back of, had just worked hard or coming off a point like that. And then it's changed.
Mm. Yeah, it's certainly an interesting one. And I know Steph and I have talked about this, not necessarily on the podcast, but just between ourselves in the past, and the fact that, one of the big risk factors for gut issues, including nausea, but not exclusively nausea, is that stress response to exercise. We've talked about that on the podcast, and the stress response to exercise is partly a function of things like hydration, body temperature, but also just the intensity of the exercise itself. So both the intensity of the exercise and the body temperature is obviously going to be related to that, because the harder you push, the more heat your body generates. So this stress response to exercise, you know it's not going to be this nice uniform pattern or just this slow linear increase. It's going to spike up and down at different stages of the event, and one of those is probably when you get to a hill and you've got to push yourself a bit harder to get up the hill. You're going to have an amplified stress response to that. As you push yourself, the heart rate goes higher, your body temperature increases for that period of time and for a short while afterwards, till it kind of settles back down again. And a lot of people would describe that sort of nausea. You go up a big hill and maybe there's a ridge or a descent on the other side, and it's sort of in that you know, 10 or 15 minutes after the climb that they start to experience those kind of symptoms. So I guess from a preventative point of view, it's thinking that those are maybe higher risk parts of the race in terms of the terrain, and then thinking, okay, well, what can I do to kind of minimize the risk that that's going to happen as a result? And some of that is not necessarily nutrition related. It can be pacing as well. It's like, you know, some people just want to go a bullet a gate up all the hills and then take it easy elsewhere. But maybe that pacing profile is not ideal from that stress response for someone who's, you know, predisposed to gut issues and things like that. The other things will be, you know, cooling. Obviously, when you're going up the hill, as we said, you're working harder, but often you're getting a less wind exposure if you're up the side of a mountain, you know, on the leeward side of a mountain. So you're not getting the airflow as well. And so that has an impact on cooling. You know, sweat rate starts to go up, so you start to get a bit more dehydrated during that period also. So there's a bunch of factors there. So yeah, pacing, controlling that, be conscious that, you know, maybe you need a bit more fluid in, you know, knowing that a hill is coming up. Obviously it might be hard to drink during that climb, but even if it's before, you know, the 10 or 15 k's before that, going, yeah, I need to make sure I'm well on top of my hydration prior to that. Not going silly with that, of course. And then the other is the body temperature side. So, you know, pouring water over yourself, if it's, as long as it's not, you know, tropical conditions where that's not going to really work, but in drier conditions that will certainly help to cool you down a bit as well. So any of those things that can kind of reduce that stress response to exercise might be helpful in that scenario. We talked a bit about, I think, having ginger, and you found that helpful in the past as well. And so maybe even having some of that ginger available at those critical times of the race, and just having some contingency supply of that with you, so you can go, okay, I'm starting to feel a bit nauseous, well, I've got some ginger with me. So you can see that by trying to anticipate the high risk sections of the race for nausea and implementing pacing, cooling, and nutrition strategies to minimize their impact, we can hopefully get out in front of these issues and prevent them from occurring in the first place. But the final thing to discuss with Brett is not so much the planning, which we've already done, but the contingency planning, looking at what can be done if it does start to unravel on the day. So you've got your plan, and I guess today it's about, well, what happens when things start going off plan? And I'm sure pretty much everyone listening to this has had this experience before. I think anyone who's done any kind of ultra distance event, this will be a common phenomenon. So has that certainly been the case for you in the past, where you've sort of had a plan of some sort, you know, maybe quite informal, quite formal, but then you've sort of got to a certain stage in the race and the plan sort of gone out the window, and then you're like, now what?
Nearly every time except for the one race that's probably been my best. When I stuck to the plan for that, everything went actually quite well. But that's because the plan fell out because of, yeah, I ran into these issues where I had to bail from the plan.
Yeah, absolutely. So listeners may be aware, we did a podcast episode, it was the end of last year or the start of this year. It was episode 72A with ultra running coach Jason Koop. And we talked about the framework that he came up with called ADAPT. And, you know, as he said in that episode, there's nothing particularly special about this framework. There are a lot of other industries that have similar kinds of things, maybe different acronyms for it, but a similar kind of mental process, I guess, that you go through when things start to go wrong. And this is not a framework that is specific to nutrition issues that can happen during a race. That could be related to anything. It could be blisters, it could be an injury, it could be, you know, whatever. But I guess there's the ADAPT acronym, so ADAPT. So the first part of that is accepting the situation you're in, and not just plowing ahead going, no, it's fine, rah, rah. I think, you know, from talking to you over the last few weeks and, you know, knowing the things that have happened to you in the past, I'm not sure that the accept is going to be a massive problem for you.
It has been in the past, and I think I've now accepted that I need to accept.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Okay. And yeah, it's definitely a big one, because, you know, if you don't accept, then the next steps don't happen. And so that's, I guess, the key thing around this. So the next part is diagnose, and that's trying to understand what the problem is. And depending on what's going wrong, sometimes that can be very obvious. Yeah, that's a 2-second, you know, sense check. Sometimes it can be a little bit trickier if you've sort of got some sort of vague and nondescript symptoms of something's not right, but you don't really know what it is. For you in the past, has it been pretty obvious when things have been going wrong, what's going wrong? Not necessarily why, but what is going wrong?
Yeah, for the most part, nausea has been my main issue, like in events. And so that has varied. It's probably come on slowly and I've not realized. And then you get to that point where I've not been eating or drinking. And there's been other times where it was literally food to the mouth and it just clicked, just went, nah, you don't want that. And from there, it was quite sudden. So I've had both of those.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, that's the diagnose side of things. And so the next part is the analyze part. And so this is, I guess, thinking, well, what have you got available to you? What resources have I got that I can make use of that might be changing up the drink mix, changing up the types of foods? It might be things that you can use to cool yourself down in terms of change of, you know, the gear you've got. If you've got sort of more gear on that's, you know, maybe it was cold earlier on in the race and you were kind of rugged up a little bit, but now you've gone up a big hill and you're really hot, you know, taking some of that stuff off. Again, preventative, doing that before you even start the hill can be helpful also. So all of that kind of stuff can be helpful. So the analyze obviously is that just stopping to think rather than just going, oh, it's all terrible, is thinking, well, what have I got with me? What can I use in my environment? And then using that. And then coming up with, obviously, the P part is the plan, deciding what to do about that. And when you do have nausea, obviously, it's difficult. But as Jason said on that podcast, for gut issues generally, and I don't think nausea is any different or special here, is, you know, reducing pace and cooling are going to be two of the things that have the biggest impact. And then maybe using something like the ginger might be helpful in that scenario as well. And I think from what you were saying, Brett, you've had some success with that in the past, even if it is temporary, but it might be something that at least starts to take the edge off a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. I've had, a couple of times when it's been quite nauseous, and then obviously that just slows me for the next hour, maybe not cooling as effectively as I probably could have been, but I know that it's come around for me, especially in 100K distance. You get this second wind, and some of my best kind of moments racing have been on the back end of a nauseous bout where you just revive from the dead and you just, you don't know how you've got all this energy all of a sudden, but yeah.
Yeah, cool. And then finally, as Jason said, you know, taking action. If you don't do anything different, don't expect a different outcome. And so that's going to be a key piece to that as well. So just thinking through some of the things I was talking about there, both in terms of the prevention, like, you know, there's a climb coming up, what can I do? And then the I've got to the top, the nausea is starting to kick in, what do I do? Are you sort of thinking already, you know, these some of these things that either I've done in the past and they might have been helpful, but I just need to remember them, or things like, oh, I hadn't thought of that, that might be useful to think about as well?
I think prevention certainly is the hydration piece. Thinking back to past experiences and now knowing what we have kind of worked out a bit throughout this process. So just sticking to that, sticking to that and making sure that I am hydrating appropriately. One that I kind of did a lot of working in summer because I knew I was going to probably have a hot race in February was that cooling, just thinking of different ways to cool myself. And yeah, certainly haven't really used that in the past, but now kind of can value that a bit more, I think.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And it's tricky as well in your scenario because you don't have crew for this race. Because if you had crew, they could get, you know, stockings filled with ice at checkpoints. You could put that around your neck and shoulders and things to cool, you know, like you see in the Australian Open tennis and things where they have breaks between play and, you know, all of those things to help cool you down. You're not going to have that luxury, obviously, but. You do what you can with pouring water over yourself and even just the impact of clothing, as we said, like if you're someone who likes to kind of rug up in the morning when it's quite cool at the start of a race, you know, often people kind of forget to strip off when it comes to a climb until they're halfway up the climb and they're just absolutely sweltering.
Yeah, I'm someone that's kind of, learned that lesson too many times of being too hot, too phased into a race. And now I just grip my teeth on the start line in the cold, knowing that it's going to save me that issue. But UTA's got lots of, there's lots of little creeks and waterfalls and things, not everywhere, but there's certainly now things that I would have ran past before. I now know, hey, one must stop and just splash some water on the back of the neck or get the arms wet and little things like that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Yeah, so I think from that point of view, it's just having those things in your back pocket. And we talked last time about having sort of your list of, I'm just trying to remember how you described it, was take Phil.
Then leave.
Leave, yeah, take Phil, leave with you, so when you get to checkpoints, you know what you need to pick up, what you need to refill, what you can get rid of. And I wonder whether having Adapt and maybe a couple of these ideas together with that information that you have for checkpoints is useful as well. So you've got it there to refer to, because as we said last time, like once you're 80Ks into a race, trying to remember this stuff becomes a little bit more challenging. So yeah, if you've got it written there in front of you that you can just refer to, then that's obviously going to be really useful. And that's an important part of that analyze that we were talking about. Part of that is maybe reading this stuff in those moments and going, okay, well, you know, this is what I'm feeling. And then here's a list of things that I can think about. Or have I remembered to, you know, reduce excessive clothing? Have I remembered to keep hydrating? Have I remembered to, you know, use some of that ginger maybe before I get to that climb to try and settle my stomach down so it's not too bad, rather than waiting till the nausea is terrible before I start using it, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So by using the ADAPT framework that Jason Koop mentioned on the podcast, trying to anticipate some of the things that could go wrong, having some plans for what to try in those situations, and having this written down so you don't have to rely on remembering it in the moment, all of these things can be really helpful if you find yourself in one of those unfortunate situations. For some people, it's going to be cramping. For some people, it's flavor or texture fatigue. For others, it's bonking or hunger flatting, or different types of gut issues. In Brett's case, it's nausea specifically. You'll probably know what your major concerns are, and using these strategies can put things in place to help you work through it in the moment, even if you are feeling sore, fatigued, or downright miserable. Now, as we start to wrap up, Brett mentioned an absolutely brilliant idea he spotted in an online forum that can make refilling bottles or flasks with drink mix powder so much easier mid-race.
One thing I just got my hands on, which was actually has been pretty useful, well, I can see it being useful, is I saw someone suggest that you use popsicle bags for your powder. Normally I just use Ziploc bags, but it's just like a little Zupa Duper pack with a sealable, you know, it's same as a Ziploc. So then you can just, that's honestly going to turn and just fall straight into a flask rather than having a rip or, you know, shake around a Ziploc.
Oh, but in the shape of like a Zupa Duper, but with a Ziploc at the top. Yeah, okay, cool. Where'd you get those from?
It's just online. I just Googled Ziploc. Just popsicle bags. And it's just for you to make homemade icicles.
Right, okay.
These are called Zipsicles, but I got them through someone else was selling this product. It wasn't from, but yeah, they look like a Zupa Duper container with a sealable top on them.
Yeah. And obviously listeners won't be able to see it, but I'm looking at you holding it up now. It probably looks a little bit bigger than your standard Zupa Duper, but it's about 3/4 full. Is it with powder?
No, this is full.
It's all full to the top.
Yeah. I'd say it's probably like an inch or so shorter than a Zupa Duper in terms of height.
And just a little bit wider.
Yeah, yeah. So I reckon put these just in the back. You know, it's obviously the same volume of powder that I would have in a Ziploc bag, just less Ziploc bag to worry about. So.
Mm. And I think they'd also probably pack neater as well.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. And I know from a mixing point of view, like I know how I have to shake a Ziploc, or you rip the corner at the bottom and then you're kind of there just...
And you spill half of it out at the edges of the bottle, and you end up with sticky bottles and stuff, where you're right, you just take the opening of that is smaller than the opening of the bottle, so just put that in the top and...
Just let it all fall
that's
in.
That's super cool.
I know, when I saw that recommendation, I was just like, thank you, because I've been looking for what's the right way to do that. You know, I've bought old electrolyte tablet containers like this, like your precision hydration, little canisters. But they've only got a small volume, whereas these bags are a little bigger and lighter and, you know, soft. So it was a good one. So I recommend anyone looking up, popsicle bags or Zipsicles, and get your hands on some.
There you go. They're going to have this unexpected rush on supply and wonder what's going on.
Yeah.
So it's time to wrap up our session with Brett and wrap up his preparation for race day. So to finish off our conversation, I handed it over to him for any final questions or concerns as he enters the last week before UTA.
I've emailed and asked you just about salt tablet intake. I'm sure I've had in the past was I unknowingly at that time didn't know much, and I put a whole packet of salt on some chips. and had those chips with that extra salt, and that all just went to my stomach halfway up Iron Pot, and it was not a good time. But ginger saved the day on that occasion. But yeah, so you recommended perhaps in the middle of the day when I might be taking, you know, 2 or 3 an hour to space them out if possible.
Yeah, yeah, so you're right. So it is one of the issues with high doses of salts. So chloride is, if it all hits the stomach at once, you can get quite bad nausea or even in some cases vomiting. I learnt that the hard way during my PhD because we had to use salt capsules for that. And we had to give them, you know, like, I can't remember how much, a lot over the whole day. And so I was sort of warned by this because I'd known people in clinical medicine research that had used salt capsules and had similar issues. And so I played around with it. And initially we used just the standard gelatin capsules, but they dissolve almost instantly in water. And so basically it just dumps the whole lot of salt because the capsule just falls apart straight away. And, you know, I can't remember how many capsules it was, like 4 or 5 at once. And yeah, I was in the bathroom getting rid of it again within about 10 minutes. But what I found over time was that, one, spacing it out is definitely helpful. 2, mixing it with food is helpful because, again, it sort of dilutes it in the stomach with all the other stuff that's in there. And 3, using capsules that break down a bit more slowly is helpful as well. So we played around in my PhD a lot with the type of capsules where you can just buy blank capsules online to fill with whatever you want. We ended up using the methyl cellulose capsules, which are often promoted as vegan capsules because obviously gelatin's not vegan, but they break down more slowly compared to the gelatin capsules. And I know the product that you're using uses those methyl cellulose capsules as part of that, so they should break down a little bit more slowly. You can go for like the enterically coated capsules that survive the stomach completely and break down super slow, but you still want to get that sodium in before the race is over. So I think that's probably too slow potentially for this purpose. So yeah, I think those methyl cellulose capsules are fine, and certainly when we started using them in our research, we found that was much better tolerated. So yeah, and it sounds like you've sort of tried those. It was sort of the last thing you had to try, was sort of trying one every sort of 20 minutes or so and just seeing if that was tolerated okay over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and that's all good. And the other one was whether or not I've got some outdoor research like active ice sleeves, so they're meant to be cooling. You know, does this have an impact on sweat rate and how much sweat is and cooling? And if so, yeah, just so I know if I'm to wear them on race day, yeah, what adjustments I'd need to make.
Yeah. So they're arm covers, those ones?
Yeah, they're a cooling one though, I suppose, not a warming one.
Yeah. It's a good question. I haven't had a lot of experience with them. How sort of porous is the fabric in terms of letting water through?
Yeah, it's, you know, what I was doing in my hot, like throughout summer when I would wear these, I'd dump them in water. Or cover my arms in water if I already had them on as part of the cooling, and it did seem to work quite well. The material seems quite thin.
Yeah. I mean, what you could probably do is just experiment. Just get like a little, I don't know, shot glass of water or something small amount of water on the inside of it, pour it and see if it goes through the fabric to the outside, because obviously that's what your sweat is going to have to do to evaporate off. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, the amount of sweat you produce is based on your body temperature, so regardless of how easily your sweat on the skin surface can evaporate, if you're cold you're going to produce less sweat anyway. So if they're having an effect of cooling you down, probably doesn't matter a huge amount either way, I wouldn't have thought.
Yep. No, that's helpful.
All right, anything else that we need to cover off today that you can think of, or any last minute things you're like, oh, I need to check this or ask that or plan that?
No, I think I just need to one more week to get through and into the car and get there and away we go.
Yep, awesome. All right, well, thank you so much, Brett, for sharing your journey. I know I've had a lot of people that I've spoken to over the last few weeks going, oh, it's been so good to listen to this series and how the whole sort of preparation's gone and how Brett's gone. As we said, you know, last week, anything could have happened. You could have had horrible gut issues that we couldn't resolve. You could have got injured halfway through and not even made it to the start line. But, you know, touch wood, it's all gone well and you've been healthy and injury-free and ready to go. So, yeah, best of luck with it all. And thank you so much for sharing your journey with everyone, because I think it's been a great learning experience for a lot of people.
No, thank you, Alan. I appreciate it. Thanks to everyone that's listened along. And yeah, I've certainly learned a lot, and it's been quite simple, I guess, at the end of the day. And I hope that that's kind of come across through the podcast as well, that doesn't take a lot to kind of make a difference to your performance. So
yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. And I think, you know, often people spend a huge amount of time and effort into their training schedules and planning out, you know, every single session to the nth degree. But when it comes to the nutrition side, they're just like, oh, just eat whatever. As you said, it's not a massive burden or something massive that you have to change or too onerous to put some of these things into place. But they, as you said, they can make a bit of difference by putting a bit of a level of planning into your nutrition that you might with your training. So, yeah, awesome. Cool. Thank you. We'll wrap it up there. And yeah, best of luck for UTA.
Thank you.
So that brings to a close our sixth and final session with Brett before UTA. But we have decided to add on a seventh bonus episode to this podcast series. I chatted to Brett off air after recording this one, and he's agreed to come back on the podcast one last time to let us know how it all went on race day. What worked well, what didn't, what he'd do differently next time, and any other things he learnt during the race weekend. We'll be recording this one less than 48 hours after Brett completes the race, so it's a great opportunity to get his thoughts while it's all still fresh in his mind. Now remember, if you've got a race coming up over the next few months, you might like to go through the same steps we've discussed throughout this series with Brett in preparation for your event. And if you want more details about the ADAPT framework that we discussed in today's episode, you can go back and check out episode 72A with coach Jason Koop. And for strategies to help when you're in a spot of bother mid-race, episode 72B with sports dietitian and ultra runner Aaron Kolbach will have you covered there. Now, just a reminder, if you do have a question you'd like answered on the podcast, you can contact us at Fueling Endurance on Instagram, Facebook, or Threads, or Fuel Endurance on X. And remember also that there's already 76 previous questions that have been answered on the podcast. So if you are new, welcome. But you might like to go and check out the back catalogue to see if there's something there that will be helpful to you. If you want to be notified every time a new episode is available, you can hit subscribe on the podcast app that you're listening to this on. And you can get your hands on the Fueling Endurance ebook, which provides written articles covering the first 2 years of podcast episodes. And you can get your hands on that at fuelingendurance.com. Or for the Kindle version, you can search Fueling Endurance on Amazon. But that's it for the T-12 series, apart from our bonus episode, obviously coming up in a couple of weeks' time. Hope you found this series enjoyable and useful for your own race preparation. This is something that we decided to do. We had no idea whether people were going to enjoy it, find it useful or not. Obviously very different to the standard podcast episodes that we normally do. So hopefully it has been of value to people, and certainly send us feedback via social media. If you'd like to hear another T-12 series, maybe in a different event, marathon or Ironman or a cycling event or something like that, we're sort of tossing up whether to continue to do another series of this with another type of event in the coming months. But have a great week, everyone. We'll see you back here next week as we resume normal programming with Fueling Endurance. And of course, the week after, we'll catch up with Brett and find out the aftermath from UTA. We'll see you next week.